I can now prompt from my Laura model a new sketch from my father, seemingly, like, in his vibe with his crazy energy and loose abstract facial and like literally made me cry the first time it worked.
Welcome back to Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025. Today I'm catching up with colorful Carl Cleanthes, the vibrant artist blending NFTs, AI, and blockchain through his live streams and collaborations. We're diving into his colorful journey, from repurposing his dad's sketches with AI Laura models to advocating for artists' rights in the Graphic Artists Guild. Carl shares how AI unlocks creativity, the ethics of generative art, and why blockchain could prove authenticity in a fake news world. So check out Carl over at colorfulcarl.com. You can watch his live streams on YouTube at colorfulcarlart, Wednesdays 8 p.m. Eastern, and tune into the Pixel Retentive podcast. Don't forget to grab your passes for the panels, art, crypto vibes over at bostonblockchainweek.com. Now let's get colorful with Carl. Well, Carl, man, my colorful friend, it's good to see you back here with us. Met you last year at Boston Blockchain. I'll make sure the links to that episode's in the episode description here so people can catch up on that. But what have you been up to since we last chatted?
Just, man, same old, just growing and expanding and doing art and being colorful, you know?
Right.
So, Can't complain too much. Still big into crypto, still making NFTs, still live streaming every week.
You are still doing the stream?
Yep, every week, Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern. I'm Colorful Carl Art on YouTube, but if you go to colorfulcarl.com, it links to, like, everything that I do.
Perfect.
So, you know, I've got my podcast, Pixel Retentive, on the intersection of art and business.
Right.
We're about to hit our 100th episode there.
Oh, congratulations on that. That's a
Thanks,
big milestone.
Man. Yeah, it's pretty cool. The live stream, I think we're over like 130, 140. We're getting close. Got to be close to 150. I've been doing it for 3 years straight. There's 52 weeks. I probably miss 5-6 weeks a year at the most. So, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, I just been making content, making art. Epic Maid's doing really good. So, all of it's great.
So, do you still have... I remember you said that all of the stuff in the live stream was coming from art that you had from that your dad had saved. So are you still like using the same material? Like, have you run out yet? Seems like that's a finite supply, right?
It is a finite supply. So yeah, yes and no, right? So like the like beginning of the live stream was like me taking these sketches of my dad's and dropping them into Photoshop and then drawing on top of them, layering in other pieces of his paintings. Cause I, you know, he had like watercolor styles and Pollock styles and like these crazy faces, and the Pollock ones were all along the ceiling. And so he had like 4 or 5 distinct styles. So I kind of just bashed them all together and just draw on top of them. But yeah, I started to run out of like base, you know, sketches that I liked, that were inspiring to me. I started looking into, taking a side step from here, like, I'm deeply in the creative business, right? Like, I have an agency.
Right.
We do animation. Then I have this little side thing I do where I Colorful Carl Art with Cleanthes Studios and my collaboration with my dad. And you know, and then also I'm on the Graphic Artists Guild on the advocacy committee where, you know, I help, you know, push and shape legislation and advocate for artist rights and creative, you know, protections and all that sort of stuff. So
we'll be getting into that in just a minute.
Yeah. And all of that, I've had to understand these technologies, you know, Web3, NFTs, but also, you know, AI has gotten massive over the past year and a half, 2 years, where it's like all anyone talks about and most professions, I feel like. But so I needed to learn it and I needed to get into the weeds of that. So I actually decided that a good kind of no risk play would be for me to understand a Laura model. Once I heard about what these were, I decided to make my own using my dad's artwork.
Can you explain what a Laura model is? I don't think I've heard of this one yet.
Sure. So everyone's familiar at this point with generative AI imagery, you know, your Mid Journeys and Stable Diffusions, and Adobe's got theirs, and everyone's got their different version. But a Laura model is something that's very specific that sits on top of another generative AI model. Laura stands for Low Rank Adaptation Model. So it sits on top of some of your other generative models. And what it does is it basically you feed through that first and foremost as the priority to create your images. And I'm sure there's a much more technical, and I'm sure I oversimplified that in some ways. So don't you know, take that to your grave. But the idea is you control a limited data set that you're prompting through first and foremost, right?
Is it similar, like the instances, like where you kind of like train it to think along the side? Like I have to write our episode descriptions for one of our other podcasts. I have it as a certain voice that I call it. And like all the data that I fed into that instance now is specific to that podcast only.
Correct. It's very similar to that, but it's on the generative image side versus the copy text side. So yeah, basically I trained one. Because I have a bunch of GPTs that I trained, you know, instances, if you will, on like everything about my life and my businesses and my goals and my capabilities with the business. And so like I dumped all this stuff in there, but I also dumped in there my first NFT collection I did with my dad that has all the descriptions and all the ways that I talk about my dad's art, because I created that NFT art memoir of my father's work back in 2022. And so it deeply understands my motivations, how I speak, and like the things that are important to me. So I took all of these things from my dad, all of these pieces of art, and I fed them into my GPT and got and told it what I was saying. Hey, I'm trying to build a lore model. I need descriptions to, you know, help this prompt better and give me some tags and blah, blah, blah. And then that I exported all of that out, put it into a lore model that I built on Scenario. I think it's Scenario AI. Let me check that out, but they're really good. Scenario.com. It's a really user-friendly way to make your own lore models. The CEO there is pretty cool. It's like it's a good business, and their user license agreements are great. By the way, I'm on a total ADD sidebar. Like, if you're gonna build lore models, make sure that they don't have like unlimited blanketed license to do whatever the hell they want with your stuff afterwards, which some of the other platforms do.
Yeah, that was like a question Facebook. I was gonna have.
Yeah, right, so right. Anything you've ever uploaded to Facebook over the like since they opened, they have license to do whatever they want with, and you didn't know when you were uploading pictures of your kid 15 years ago that now that's in their data set for their generative AI model. Yep. You're welcome, right? So that kind of stuff you got to be mindful of. Scenario has a really good user license agreement, just through my observation and checking that out. But all the way fast forwarding, I can now prompt from my Laura model a new sketch from my father.
That's
seemingly
wild.
Like, in his vibe with his crazy energy and loose abstract facial and like literally made me cry the first time it worked, and I did it. I took some finicking and dialing it. Oh my god, it was beautiful. Wow. And if you listen to my last episode, I do cry about my dad often, but from last year. But yeah, it's really cool, and I don't know, man.
I have tons of questions then about AI and art, and looking at the stuff that you kind of sent over to me, I think you succinctly summed up some like really interesting points on here. But like how you use AI in your work as a creator, I think is very fascinating to me, because you have obviously the need to protect your output to make sure that other AI models aren't training off of your stuff, right? Without your knowledge or consent. So how do you guard against that? How do you use it too without, training it with your materials then?
Yeah. So the Laura models you train on in this particular instance, right, with Scenario, does not feed their models. Like that's part of the agreement, right? And you can even download it and run it locally on your machine using like a comfy UI and do your own like workflow. But then you have to have the computational power to run all that. And that becomes a whole other, you know, barrier. But yeah, I look at it very much as a tool. On the advocacy side, like I'm really staunch on the compensation, credit, and consent mindset. So your models and all the data in your model should be trained exclusively on things that you were given permission to use, that you know you compensated the artist for, and that they got credit for being a part of that model, right? And you know, these big huge models that like Midjourney runs on, for instance, none of those people gave consent, right? So there's a lot of arguments and cases out there, and there's some attorneys out there like, oh, this is fair use, and that's total bullshit in my opinion. And if that becomes fair use, it starts to destroy and undermine all of the copyright laws, and then we're in really big problems, right? Because copyright doesn't just protect Disney and Warner Brothers and all these big huge companies. It allows people like me that run my business and my colleagues to actually sell our things to people. Without that, we can sketch things out and do whatever. They can go on our website, just grab all of our images, throw them into a lore model, and go, oh, make some Epic Made style art, and we don't need them anymore. Like that can't be the way this goes. That's the fights we're having here on the advocacy side, because copyright has to be able to protect us. And as it stands right now, things that are generated from a model that you don't have acute control over, that are not significant human input. If it doesn't have significant human input, it cannot be protected under copyright law. And you've seen this, you know, this has had come through in many different copyright instances. But like there was a monkey that like was taught to use this camera and he's taken all these pictures. And, you know, the guy that owns the camera and probably the monkey, or at least responsible for it, tried to copyright these images. And they're like, it's not human authored. If there's no significant human authorship, then it's not copyrightable. So no, this is creative. This is open source or creative, whatever the term is. Yeah.
So you're telling me the otter art that I so love that the zoo in Ohio likes to sell on occasion is not copyrightable?
Correct.
Oh,
correct.
Man.
But if you're buying the original, like the original is still a thing that people want to own, but right? Yeah. Anybody can take that and put it on their website and sell a print of it because it's unprotectable because it wasn't created by a human being. They've gone as far as like there was a guy that wrote a book or some like series of pamphlets and shit. And he's like, oh, I didn't write this. It was dictated to me by God. Well, they rejected his copyright claim because God is not a human being. They're serious. Like, and I just thought that was an amazing aspect to it. Yeah, all this animal art and stuff like that,
right.
Not copyrightable. And neither is purely AI-generated work, right? So if you can't prove that there's significant human input and defend that in court, then it's considered not copyrightable.
So what counts as significant human input then?
That's the gray area right now, right? So,
yeah.
Right? So like, you can copyright your prompt if you have a nice long prompt that's like, it's akin to copywriting some writing, right?
Right,
But whenever you put a prompt into AI, you can put the same prompt in 50 times to Midjourney and you'll get 50 different images, right?
Right.
So like, there's not human control there. So when you start getting into in painting and doing things like that and getting into lots of detail, lots of control, lots of artistic decisions, that's where you start to have a lot more value, a lot more protectability. And a copyright is a thickness, right? So the more customized, independent things that you put into this, you have more and more protectability, right? Like I've done a bunch of pieces of art early on when I didn't understand all the nuances of copyright law, and I was just excited about the AI technology. Like I grabbed, like I generated a bunch of these like Silver Surfer females like on surfboards, right? Then I put it like I cut them out and I put them like, and then I modified them a whole bunch, right? And then I put them in like the cosmos and made all these like crazy space images, and then layered my dad's artwork in it and did some waves and like cosmic nebulas, and the stuff's beautiful, but like anybody could take that base image of that, like I called it the Mercury Rider, and do whatever they wanted with it because I didn't create that. That was a generated image, right? But I can protect the whole rest of it because I created that and assembled it and my creative input.
That's your derivative.
So, right. So like that for me is a good use case of like, how is this used as a tool, right? So what tools are you using to expedite your creativity? So on my live stream, you'll see me use AI within a Photoshop all the time, because for me, like I needed this rock last night. I did on, I was making a portrait of my friend's kid. So I have a picture of him like making this crazy pose. And like, I put him on this rock that's like shooting through the cosmos. But like, I didn't want to draw a rock and I didn't want to look through 20 pages of stock images.
Right,
so I just
circled
the spot and I was like, big giant rock. And it gave me a couple ideas and boom, and I put it in there. And now that I modified it and changed it, tweaked it a little bit, cut it off the background, add some colors on it. But that's how you should be using this thing, right? To expedite creativity, to do things faster and better, but not to replace your own hand on the work, right?
Right. Yeah, thank you. Like the way I find AI most effective for me is like I find myself getting stuck, or like I hit those creative blank walls. The curse of the blank sheet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you can use AI to get yourself past the blank sheet portion, at least get you moving like with some ideas. And that's usually where I find the most use out of it. It gets me started.
100%. It can literally eviscerate creative block. Eviscerate it, right? Because if you're a creative person at all, and look, all of us are creative. Every kid you ever met is in some way creative. And at some point, someone squashes it out of them and tells them they're not creative or what, you know, whatever that ends up being. I didn't have that, obviously, in my life, which was beautiful. But yeah, so like when you're thinking about ideas and you're passionate about whatever you're trying to create, if you have a machine, if you just tell it what you're doing and you already have some ideas, and even if it generates 15 shitty ideas, those are likely to spark what the good ideas are because you're like, oh, that's bad, but that one's bad. And then like some things start going off and the little connectivity.
If I combine these three, then now I have something good.
Yeah, well, these three ideas were really bad, but if we reversed all of those and did this, like, you know, never know. It's really cool.
So tell me about then some of the advocacy work that you're doing. Like, what is going on behind the scenes to try to rectify, I guess, some of the direction that AI is trending towards right now?
Right. So we're collectively coming together with other copyright organizations and other like the Copyright Alliance is a big one that we're a part of. And there's a whole bunch of other organizations where all of us come together that represent like authors or actors or illustrators or, music industries, all these places. Right. But we all have the same, goals that we need to protect creators' rights. Right. So, there's a campaign we're launching soon, like with the guild, that I can't really talk about yet because I don't want to steal the thunder. But we're just trying to bring everyone together saying like, hey, what does a future look like where creators can no longer make money? And now we just have these giant algorithms producing recycled bullshit based off of other recycled bullshit that's been generated for 5, 10, 15 years. What does this look like in the future when artists are like forced to do something else because we can't live off of our work anymore because it's all replaced by some machines that can copyright work? Like, no, we can't have that.
Right, right.
And the work will be terrible, right? Like you can go through Facebook right now and look and you can easily tell, oh, this is AI generated, that's AI. And it's not just like it doesn't look real anymore. It looks like hyper real, like from the future, weird shit, oversaturated. Everybody's perfect looking, and like there's no humanity in it. It's all like,
is that
weird.
How do you quantify? Like, what is it that AI stuff is missing? Because it is missing something. There's little things like some misspelling of words. Like, so I'll add an extra finger or take fingers away. It does all kinds of weird stuff.
Well, the finger thing has largely gone away. They'll keep dialing it in, right? So I don't know what it is. As a professional image creator for 20 years, though, I can just see them immediately. But writers can tell when stuff's AI written really quickly.
Try to get to write a joke, and it's terrible. It does not understand comedy.
That's or like sarcasm. It can't. Yeah, it's too literal, right? So like that really messes things up. So back on the guild side of things, so we're starting a campaign there, but we all are also like part of the conversation. The big thing in advocacy, whether you're advocating for artists' rights or, food deserts or civil rights or anything, the biggest thing, and my wife taught me this because she's big in the advocacy space. She works in environmental justice and clean energy. But if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So if you're not sitting there a part of the damn conversation, you're just getting bought and sold to whoever, whatever. They don't care about you, right? So that's the big thing. Just being at the table, being a part of the conversations, raising your concerns, and being in the room with the people who are making these laws, the legislators and the people that influence them. So we do a lot of that at the Guild on the Advocacy Committee.
So people wanted to join the Guild. How can they do that then?
GraphicArtistsGuild.org. Been around since the, I want to say late 70s, maybe early 60s. We've been producing the Pricing and Ethical Guidelines Handbook since it's 84, I believe. We're about to launch the 17th edition. It has everything you could ever want in it to learn about the business side, the fundamental business side of being a working creative, right? So we got sample pricing, sample contracts, talking about licensing. We've got every industry you could possibly think of. These are all run on like professional research. So we're not just like, oh, we think these numbers should be that. Like, no, this is an aggregate of all of the research we've done and gotten actual working creatives to go, I've been in the industry 20 years. I do this and I charge this, right? Or I just got out of college and I charge this, right? So we have the whole range. All of that's like really, really good information. So
probably a little more in depth than me with ChatGPT asking to make a quote for me.
Way more in depth. And you can get some intentional stuff in there. And, use ChatGPT as well. But like the more resources you can have to and understand the better perspective you can have there. So yeah, I think, that's kind of the high level in the guild. We're out there trying to do the things, move the needle. We're educating people on AI a lot too, right? So we're getting ready to put out, the last thing I'll say on that, and this is coming out very soon, is the ethical use case of AI. So like, how do we as the guild say that like, this is a tool, it's not good or bad, like any tool, it can be used for good or bad. Like in my instance, like I now have a thing that makes new art for my dad and that feels amazing. If you stole all my dad's art without my consent and made that same thing, I'd be really mad at you, right? Yep. So like, but the idea is like, here's all the things you should be considering and things you should know about in the world of AI and some ways to protect yourself as well. Like there's tools out there that like you can like embed watermarks into your work, essentially watermarks that like sabotage the data set stuff. One of them's called Nightshade. I forget what the other one's called. And these are developed up in the Boston area, I'm pretty sure, as well, which is really cool. You know, the innovative corner there. I think Stanford might be doing something with it. Don't quote me on that. But there's a couple tools to help artists protect their work from being put into data sets without their permission.
What about then as the consumer or somebody like me who likes to play with some of these AI tools? Like, how can I be sure that the information or the stuff that I'm getting back hasn't been trained against somebody else's material and authorized? Like UDO is one that I like to play with to make songs. But now I'm thinking about it, like, there's no way that they have the rights to all this music to generate these things, right?
So therein lies the problem, right? So there's some legislation now that's trying to be put through that basically makes generative platforms have to share what's in their black box, their data set, because currently they don't. It's considered intellectual property or, you know, a trade secret kind of thing. So that's part of supporting legislation. Like, that's the first step. After that, it's really just doing your research. You know, we don't specifically endorse any platforms at the Guild just because that could get hairy quick. Just because, like, are we just going to listen to what, hey, we promise, right? Like,
are there any like big offenders that we should maybe stay away from?
I mean, you know, Midjourney doesn't seem to really care about creator rights at all. And, you know, there's others like that as well. You know, Adobe seems to care, at least on the PR side. And they, I don't know how substantiated this is, but like their data set is allegedly have been trained on only the stock images they already had licensed to, because they already have a whole license bank.
They've got
been
a big bank too. Yeah.
Long time. So that said, you know, I know people that are deep in the weeds of these things and have tested their database like on the generative side, and they can definitely get them to generate images that, you know, probably shouldn't be in there, which is interesting. And they've also heard some things that some of the images that were on Adobe stock were generated through Midjourney and that sort of stuff. And it's really like, how do you stop that, right? And this is sort of like, it's all
so
leaking into
data.
Each other now. So I think Adobe's trying hard, but they're also a giant, you know, for-profit tech company. So you just have to be mindful of that and do your own research. But, you know, I don't want to disparage anybody in general, you know, other than I've seen Midjourney just literally not give a shit about artists, right? So if I'm missing that and I'm speaking out of pocket on Midjourney, somebody send me proof otherwise. But that's my opinion. Like, nothing I've expressed here is the opinion of the Graphic Artist Guild. Let me throw that disclaimer out there as well. This is Carl Cleanthes representing himself today. And, you know, we come together as a collective to put things out that I might not necessarily 100% agree with whatever the Guild stance is, but the Guild collaboratively decides what goes out, right? So that's how that works.
Well, what's you're not in Boston full time, right? You fly out there for the blockchain event?
I just go there for the blockchain event. I get up there. I'm probably in Boston twice a year on average, past couple years. So,
do you know what your I assume you're going to be talking something to do with AI and probably NFTs this year, but do you know what your topic will be this year?
I think we're talking about gaming, actually.
Gaming one was awesome last year, by the way.
Oh, good.
I did get to see that. Yeah.
I got to do some more research. It's interesting. So we're seeing gaming now start to adopt NFTs on the back end. Yeah. Right? So we all knew in the Web3 community that, like, we're all junkies for it, and we're early adopters, and we're way, way early. But at the end of the day, this technology is going to be really successful when it's underpinning things and no one has any idea, right? So I think the coin Sui, but Pokemon adopted NFTs recently, called them digital collectibles, and you can get little badges and little whatever. And I don't know if they're going to have a marketplace for it eventually or whatever, like if there's any interoperability or exchange, like if they let you buy and sell and trade these things, if they have value, but it is all pinned on a blockchain. And as soon as I heard that, I went and bought a bunch of that coin and it went up like 5X. And that's how it goes, right? Because this huge brand with probably arguably some of the most valuable intellectual property in the history of mankind, right? Like, Pokemon's one of the biggest brands on the planet, is using blockchain to underpin their collect them all technology. You know, like, that's amazing, right?
That's
exactly what you want.
Yeah, they're like made for that.
Yeah, they are, really. So digital collectibles is still going to keep ramping up. And we're seeing some of this in the gaming industry, and it's going to keep going forward. I love that Pokemon took the lead on it. And they sort of silently, in the right places, told people there was blockchain technology where people would actually give a shit. And then on the other side, didn't mention it at all, because it still has kind of a tainted perspective for some people, because they just don't know, right? Like,
yeah.
So
you say yeah. NFT the wrong guy, you get digital Beanie Baby back. Carl, how do you mind asking how old you are? I think we're about the same age, right?
Yeah, I'm 40.
40s? Yeah. I've been noticing like retro gaming's been making like a big return. Like all the old NES games, like there's been like some huge channels exploding on YouTube in the last couple of years. Like what other things from our past should we be paying attention to that's probably going to be making a comeback? Because it feels like there's some nostalgia to capitalize on coming up here. Like mom jeans are back. Like what happened there?
JNCOs? Like, yeah, like right? Crazy. I could never wear JNCOs again. Though I did have the ones where you could stick your whole fucking textbook like in your back right. pocket. And I just knew I was cool in like middle school with my long hair, like a mullet. Like it was awesome.
I wish I could have JNCOs.
A little shorter. I had bangs with them. Like, I don't know what the hell I was doing, bro. It was wild. But yeah. Dude, I was just talking to somebody about that earlier. Like every single brand that was really popular in the 80s, like the 80s was like the golden age, I feel like, of cartoons and like all this sort of video games. And yeah, they're just bringing them back. Like pixel games have been huge, right? Designing a game to intentionally look like it was on Nintendo, but having infinite computational power compared to Nintendo and then not having that graphic demand. It's pretty cool to see the stuff they come up with. Like I played like a Project Zomboid game a bunch.
Oh, that game is awesome. I have that.
Yeah, Terraria is amazing. Right, like even Minecraft, like Minecraft looks Stardew like Valley. Shit on purpose. Stardew Valley is great. Yeah, I mean a bunch of great games out there for sure. My kid's like deep in the weeds on it, but he's really a VR gamer, which I've dabbled in a bit, but I think I'm too old for that. It just makes me nauseous after
me
like 45
too.
Minutes.
I try if as long as I can sit still. If I have to move around in that thing, then I just woof. No, thank you.
Oh, dude, there's one game though I bought. It's like Echo Dungeons of Eternity or Eternal. Yeah, Dungeons of Eternity. It's literally like you're running around in Diablo, but you're first person. You like pull your arrows and you're shooting and you gotta do the head shoot. Dude, it was like I was feeling ill, but I was like, I don't want to stop.
Right.
Like, it was so much fun. You like cast a fireball with like a spell and you throw it. Like it was fucking cool, man. So I love that stuff. I'm sure they're gonna figure out how to like adapt to us old guys that like weren't
right.
Our brains aren't wired that way. But yeah, I think in this space, so Diablo is probably a great segue to this. Like I remember when I first played Diablo and they really pioneered the generative dungeons and those types of things where like you could play through over and over and over again and get new shit, new weapons, new everything because it was randomized.
The loot that they did, the loot system was amazing.
That's an early AI, right?
Yeah,
so imagine being able to do that with all environments, with even characters and NPCs, and like all they do is have guardrails so it like doesn't turn into a grok and say crazy pedophile shit or like whatever kind of stuff's going on there, right? But so they have guardrails on the generations, right? And then these things get generated. And now imagine they get minted into NFTs and tradable assets, especially like your weapons and stuff.
Right.
Like, right. And then that solves all your hacking problems, right? Because, you know, all these games, like, oh, we got these good, and then we're that. You got somebody figuring out how to duplicate them and tweak the game code, and like that fixes all of that.
Right.
So I think there's a world where Web3 blockchain technology fixes some of the problems that we're going to have with AI, especially when it comes to like provability of authenticity, right? Like, did my dad paint that, or was that a generative lore that somebody else made, or was that my lore that I made, right? So I can actually have different collections now of like, hey, this is real. This is something I made of my lore that I generate, and those now mint to a blockchain as well. And these are all fakes, right? So I think we need this in news as well. Like, I mean, the world's getting absolutely insane. I don't care what side of the aisle you think you're on or whatever.
What was the story coming out of like the F-35s being like shot down by Iran? Like that was all BS. That was all generative AI they were using for the images of like the people and the planes. Like
it's crazy,
right?
So how do you know what's true anymore without a system like blockchain that has immutable records? So what I think we need on the news level and pretty much all aspects is like, how do we create a highly efficient, very fast, very cheap blockchain that does zero knowledge minting from a camera, from any sort of outlet? So like, hey, this happened on C-SPAN. So-and-so said this, right? Like, I mean, because we have leadership now that like can't tell you the truth about what they said 2 minutes ago. And like, we need we need facts again. Like blockchain will help us go, no, this is real. It's not your opinion, not my opinion, not the PR spin. What the fuck happened? I just want to know that. Yes. Right? Like, I don't need anyone's opinion. So I think blockchain will save us from that, because generative AI, yeah, we talk about six fingers and like, oh, it looks weird, but that's going away, right?
No, it'll leaps just and keep bounds getting better. Made,
yeah, it's going to be crazier and crazier and crazier. You're going to have, you know, and I don't know. It's just so crazy to think about, because like, you know, I was just like, my mind was going into just some of the, you know, filters and the AR things. It's like that stuff, you know, like how do you make sure that's not on when the things are being recorded, right? Like they're faking it live. Like, so I don't know, man. Huh. I think we're just all doomed. I'm just going to keep growing my food and just fucking paint. I'm going to go back to like analog paintings and just live off my land. You guys will find me in my rocking chair, like just chewing on some straw or something.
Well, the big thing to do is, you said, I'll tie this back to what you said earlier, but get a seat at the table. If you're worried about being eaten, make sure you're sitting at the table helping drive these discussions, right?
Whatever industry you're in, absolutely. Yeah. Be at the table. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. Never forget that.
Well, Carl, you have anything else you want to leave us with as far as AI goes?
No, I mean, we all owe it to ourselves to be paying attention and to be learning the space and understanding what the limitations are so that we can position ourselves. And I think there is a part of this that I really want to start speaking about more, is like, you know, I'm very ADD. I'm sure you can tell if you've listened to me talk for more than 5 minutes. And it's been a blessing and a curse, right? Like, I'm super creative. I have tons of great ideas, but my ability to put it all down, aggregate it, and then create a plan and then execute that plan is really, that takes so much energy, way more energy than 5 million ideas and me running around doing like it's just, it's defeating for me. So these tools are actually allowing me to unlock a deeper level of creativity and implementation. I'm able to like literally pull up my phone and turn on like the text version of ChatGPT, brain dump for 30 minutes into it, and then go, hey, aggregate that all into like something that isn't a bunch of rambly bullshit. And like, I would have never been able to do it. It's just not, like, I would never be able to comb through all that and then make it. And now we can, right? Now, yeah. So like, these things are helping people with disabilities, with shortcomings. Like, if you don't know how to visually create something, like, you can now express yourself visually, just making sure that, you know, you're doing it in a way that's ethical. Which, you know, stay tuned for the ethical guidelines of that that's coming out from the guild. But there's other organizations that are doing that as well. But yeah, it's just, it's really powerful. I think it can remove a lot of shortcomings or, you know, quote unquote handicaps that some people may have. You know, no matter how performing, high performing or successful we may or may not be, allows you to do more. And I'm excited to see what this looks like moving forward and like what me and my team and my friends can make now with a team of 10 people that we had only dreamed about ever making. You know, can we make full length feature animations with just 10 people in a reasonable amount of time and do it over and over and over again? So we're starting to experiment with some of those tools using LoRA models, trying to understand that. We don't use AI in any client work. Any deliverables to clients never have any AI in it from Epic Made. But that doesn't mean we're not deeply experimenting and understanding exactly what this looks like. And we're going to be ready to flip the switch whenever the time comes. Because at the end of the day, like, you've got to be competitive in the marketplace and have your, you know, your competitive angle. And some people that might be, hey, we're only analog. We don't do any AI, or we only make actual paintings or whatever it is. But just finding your angle and just knowing that, you know, what you're doing feels good. So I just be informed. That's
all. Informed. That's a good message to end this thing on. Well, thank you so much, Carl, for stopping by today, man. Always enjoy catching up with you. Hopefully get to meet up again in Boston.
Yeah, I'll be there first couple of days. So yeah, we'll definitely connect.
All right, sounds good. Well, thanks for your time, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good, man. See you soon.
Huge thanks to colorful Carl Cleanthes for painting a vivid picture of AI, NFTs, and blockchain's creative future. Visit ColorfulCarl.com for his art and links. Catch live streams on YouTube at ColorfulCarlArt, Wednesdays 8 p.m. Eastern, and listen to the Pixel Retentive podcast and explore LoRA tools over at Scenario.com. Don't miss Boston Blockchain Week coming up fast. You can snag your tickets over at BostonBlockchainWeek.com for talks, networks, that unbeatable crypto energy. Follow the show, share it with your creative crew, and we'll catch you all on the next episode. Produced by China Shop Productions.